Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Marigold Clothing, making fashion fun since 1989, in Broad Ripple, featuring women's clothing, gifts, and accessories, and committed to customer service. More on Facebook or at marigoldclothing.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink Indy. Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are focusing on food biz entrepreneurs, the new local food businesses that competed and won at last week's Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge in Indianapolis. First, we'll talk with one of the competition's judges, Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections, who has been in business with her candy company for 5 years now. Then we'll hear from Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge winner Zach Roan of Batch Number 2 Mustards and Ed Bond of Primal Delights Kombucha. Then we'll hear from People's Choice winners Michelle Twiddell of Indiana Craft Jerky and Robin Willis of Robbie Baby's Kitchen. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. When it comes to business ideas, particularly food business ideas, I feel like just about everybody has one. Maybe it's your grandma's best brownie recipe, or your dad's barbecue sauce, or your idea for a food truck. For local entrepreneur Carrie Abbott, it was candy. A sweet peanut candy that was something between a fudge and a brittle. And so 5 years ago, she launched Friddle. And since then, her newfangled confections candy company has grown considerably. Carrie was a judge last week for the Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge in Indianapolis, a contest sponsored by Reliable Water Services that provides seed money and business advice to new food startups. Carrie tells us about how her company has grown over the years and some of the challenges she faced along the way.
5 years ago, I had a catering business, in-home catering business. We specialized in parties of about 35 people, and we would do dessert trays. You know, we would do the savory, we would do the sweet. Everybody wanted heavy apps, and that was kind of at the beginning of candy bars, dessert bars, where there was a selection of like a few little bites. And I did one, and my partner's Micah Frank, that's part owner of Black Market. He's always like real, like non-committal. Let's do a dessert called peanut and chocolate. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And I did a kind of a deconstructed version of a Reese's cup, and it was much softer, half dipped in chocolate at Best Chocolate in Town. And then I had like hundreds of pieces left over, and I loved it. And it is minus the chocolate. It's been redoctored to withstand some retail packaging, and that is what Friddle is now.
Oh my goodness, so the idea for Friddle came about from the catering company.
Yeah, that's right. It officially started in 2011, did a whiteboard session of what would we do with this candy, how would it be packaged, and by we, it would be me and my family. We were just kind of deciding what should we do, and then came up with different, you know, two different candies that are very common, fudge and brittle. Did emerge, loved it, Google search, nobody had it. I sat on the trademark for about 6 or 7 months. The account that I wanted by the end of my first business year was Goose the Market. They were the first to take us.
Oh my goodness, so you hit your goal right off the bat.
Yeah, and it taught me a couple of things. Well, one, there are generous people in business who are genuinely willing to help other people. Two, if the customer likes your product, it benefits both. So if you have a business and you're bringing in other products, of course you're going to bring in new products because you both make money and the customers get something new and kind of interesting. So that was Molly Ely at the Goose the Market that brought us in.
What were you thinking 5 years ago when you were just launching it, you know, and maybe just getting those first accounts? What were you thinking? Did you imagine where it was going to go?
No. I was not goal-oriented. I was more of a project person and an 80%er. So I would get like most of it done and then leave like this the piece hanging. No, I had no idea. But truly, I went in probably about a year into business. So we'll say 4 years ago, I was able to clarify my goal, and that was three parts. One, add to the income of the family. We have two children, and it's nice. You know, it's nice to make a living. Two, be part of the community in as the business builds, stay connected to the community, do things, give back, whatever that means. And three, provide jobs. So those have always been my goal. I've always done those three. The money part has only come in this fifth year. And it was tough. And I thought, you know, to make this a full-fledged business, a few things had to happen. You have to create an income for yourself. Because later on, if you go for some loans, microloans, financing, partnership, nobody wants to do business with someone who's just volunteering because it almost looks like you could walk away at any point. Anyway, it was a bootstrap company for sure. I started with $1,800 that I specifically saved up to go into a brand marketing plan.
Oh my goodness. Now that's a very modest startup.
Very modest. I had we knew the idea would stick, knew the product was good, unique name that we had the trademark on. And if I did not come out with the right look in the packaging, who would want 4 ounces of this slightly hardened peanut candy? I mean, we could put it in a baggie and it might sell for $1.25, but I really wanted to create something memorable, an indulgence, a treat candy that wasn't too expensive as a gift. And so it really took every bit of that small amount of money to go straight into a marketing plan. I don't know if that's the right suggestion for everybody's product, but it was for us. Now we are distributed through three major grocery chains, Market District, they have 14 stores nationwide, Marsh Grocery, and then Kroger is a big deal for us right now. And if our packaging did not have the look with the window that only came in 2 years ago, by the way, people were buying this solid box. They don't even know what's in it. The window, the story, the hand lettering, all of it. If all those pieces weren't in place, then just your regular Joe or Jane walking by the cheese counter would never pick that up. It's the whole look and the marketing of the candy, of your product, that draws the customer in. They like it, then they come back for more.
So look back on the 5 years with Newfangled Confections and talk a little bit about some of the milestones and maybe some of the challenges that you faced and got through.
One of the major milestones for Frittle and any food product is scaling up. And so I had that problem and I have that problem. It's if you were to picture a graph and there's a slight increase year after year, slight increase, oh, a better increase. And then 1 year, all of a sudden the graph spikes completely all the way up. And that's where we are. Doesn't mean I'm more famous, does not mean I'm more rich. It means that now to go into distribution, if you get in 5 Kroger stores or Marsh, you essentially are ready and could do every single store. These groceries are so supportive. They want your product to do well. Are you ready for what they can give you?
Now, that's a big question. So growth is a big point.
Yeah, growth is, it's kind of like you need the acceptance at first that your dream is alive and you're not just a kid with a dream anymore. Why don't you just assume everybody wants your product? How are you going to plan for that? And that's a plan I did not have 5 years ago when we started. I'm closer to having that plan this calendar year. And I think you're going to see a lot of great things for Frittle.
Did you expect all this? Did you, when you started this, you know, 5 years ago, did you see the possibilities of this? Were you hopeful of the possibilities for this?
Not to sound hokey, but I knew that this candy was something special. I really did. And the only way to get it to market was to make it pretty, tell a story, lure people in. And and then see what happens. But every day is not just, I wonder what will happen today. I had no idea we would get distribution like this. A year ago, I really was kind of done with Frittle. I thought it was, I thought I was an extreme hobbyist. And my husband has a career, and I, you know, could have easily worked fast food part-time and made a ton of money. And but I think it was being pushed to that brink, which almost every business owner, major career person that treats their job like a business, reaches, where you are on the point of growth. And it seems so tough, but if you just dig and focus, you realize the super uncomfortable feeling is that you are about to grow. And that's what it's become.
Did you see yourself as this kind of an entrepreneur, you know, when you started? Did you, you know, you talked about an extreme hobby. You know, did you see yourself at this point?
I didn't. I really didn't. And even the word hobby just makes me think of someone scrapbooking, which I don't do. But I didn't have a goal. I didn't realize, I'm business savvy. I like the marketing part. I love the, you know, and that's the other thing about running a business is you need to find, I found in business the parts that became more natural to me. And that's that dream everybody talks about, doing what you love when it doesn't feel like work. Those parts I harness in the business. I move forward. I had no idea that that part would become so fun and that that would be what running a business looks like for me. The other part I didn't imagine is how painful the parts that I don't like to do, email organization, working the spreadsheets for the final net profit, what? And so those are the parts you hire out immediately. Naturally, you have to have a pulse on everything. I had no idea that these would be the parts that help form my final goal of running a successful business is and was my goal. It just became more clear in the last 2 or 3 years.
Do you still make candy?
I still make candy. So growing the team and the business growing and getting bigger has actually freed up my time more to do fun things like the judging and meet a lot of people in the industry. And still, I love test marketing new candy. I've tried gumdrops and meringues. And so for that reason, we still do new candies. And as the holiday comes up, we always try. I always get into the kitchen. We do new candies. And I drive everyone, the candy makers who are in the kitchen all the time, I drive them crazy.
We've been talking with entrepreneur Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections. For more information on her candy company, you can check out newfangledconfections.com. I'm Jolene Katzenberger, and we are back here on eDrink Indiana Radio today with a show focused on food entrepreneurs. We'll be talking with the winners of last week's local competition, the Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge. I emceed the contest as a team of judges sampled new food products and talked with half a dozen finalists in two categories, brand new companies just getting started and those in business for less than 5 years. The winner in the less than 5 year category was Zach Rohn, who is building Batch Number 2, a company that makes mustards and ketchups. I stopped by his production kitchen this week to hear how he got started making mustard and where the company is headed from here.
So it originally started, you know, as another endeavor. I had started a sausage company with a friend had started a sausage company rather, and had asked me for some help on some of the products. And you know, we had gone to culinary school together and worked together, and so spent a lot of time thinking about these things. And he came up with more the sausage and bread ends of things, and I came up with, you know, purely the condiments and sauerkrauts and such. And in the process of it, one of the things I noticed was there were so many more restrictions on meat production than there is on a product or even bread. And there was something that was unknown about the mustard end of it, especially. When I would go to talk to people and say, yeah, I was, you know, try this mustard, and they like say, did you make it? Yes. And when I was having chefs asking me how you make mustard, it became apparent that this was something that nobody did anymore. And it really, I mean, the nuts and bolts of it, it's not a hard process. It's just something that I think has been overlooked.
Well, tell me how you do make mustard. I mean, so there are mustard seeds in my cupboard. There's mustard powder in my cupboard. But how do you make mustard?
A prepared mustard is basically a liquid mixed with your mustard seed. So, you know, it kind of has, it can be any number of things. Traditionally, they used the must from grapes. And so that's, you know, where a lot of the name, even the nomenclature from it, comes from.
Is that right?
Yeah, I believe it comes from the must used in it. And then Ardens, which was something for heat. And you know, fiery must or heated must is what it was. And
so then you get mustard. Okay, I got it. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so now where do we go from there?
So, I mean, after that, it's just kind of a matter of, you know, picking the things that you want to flavor it with. So I'm very fond of apple cider vinegar. You know, that's what I think of when I think of things like, you know, eating hot dogs, when I think of potato salads, when I think of a vinegar that I like to use. So that's a base that I use on a lot of the things. And after that, it's basically a spicing game. And then in with the liquid, you know, kind of deciding, like, what other additives you want to put in it to, and by additives, I just mean other things. Like, for example, putting some beer in there to augment that flavor and you know, bring a little something different to it, or like hot sauces or molasses and other kind of, you know, ingredients.
So how did batch number two develop?
Well, it actually happened, specifically the name. So the name is in reference to my company, and this is my second attempt at having a company or trying a company, you know, because the first one didn't work out quite well. We ended up, you know, doing other things and going our own ways.
So the bratwurst thing didn't
yeah,
end up?
Actually, he ended up doing a bratwurst thing also independent, and we're still good friends. We still talk about, you know, all sorts of stuff. So the name itself was in reference to the business, and to me it was an idea starting over and, you know, trying to give a better go at something. And I remember, because I had just moved and I couldn't find all my old mustard recipes, when I decided that I had wanted to revive this idea, and I had a notebook that is, you know, just filled with scribbles and all sorts of things, and was very important. And I couldn't find it, and I tore through the house, tearing open every other box that we had packed, and, you know, I just, you know, came to the realization it probably wasn't even here. I had left it somewhere, and I realized, I said, you know, screw it. I've made this recipe hundreds of times. This is the new one. This is batch number two, and that's what I labeled it, and that was the name of the mustard I made, and it was like, oh, that's kind of catchy. And then from there, it just kind of went on.
So now you just recently won the Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge in the businesses that have been in business for less than 5 years. So kind of catch me up on where it went from coming up with the batch number two name and developing the company.
So professionally, I worked in kitchens most of my career, and through this process, the batch number two has been a side hustle until very recently. So I went from there, starting it. Mainly, I worked on developing relationships with, like, retailers and restaurants, because in my mind, I saw everybody doing, like, the farm markets and stuff, but it was something like, I can't go out on a Saturday. I can't, you know, I can't do markets during the week or whatever. And so I went for like restaurants and retailers. And actually, I believe my first retailer was Your Local Deli in Irvington. And then my first restaurant was Bluebeard. And because, you know, I had known some people over there, and we got to talking, and, you know, they were kind enough to kind of say, hey, why don't you, you know, try it out over here, see if people like it. And then, you know, from there, it built, and we started adding things. And then I would say about 8 months ago or so, I realized that, you know, I actually might have something here that, you know, it started out really silly, the concept that you could sell. I remember my chef at the time telling me But yeah, but I mean, how are you going to sell enough mustard to justify doing that? And it was like, yeah, that does seem problematic, but it eventually became apparent that it was a real idea, and so I kind of made a plan and a goal, and as of April of this year, I broke away from my full-time job, and I do this full-on.
That's awesome right there.
Yeah, no, and that's one thing I can really say that I'm very thankful for the low wages of the restaurant industry is it makes it real easy to make that leap of faith.
So what was it like entering the Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge?
Well, it was a little kind of unreal because you fill out things online and then you just kind of assume that they just go into the ether and nobody ever looks at them. And then when somebody does call you back, it's like, oh, yeah, that's really cool. Okay, I'm considered. And so you try not to get, you know, either too excited or too confident or too worried. And for me, it was very exciting. It still kind of blows my mind that, you know, not only am I doing something that people are liking and that, you know, but it's surreal. It is kind of the fact that things do progress and that, you know, that the efforts are being put in and that they're being, you know, rewarded or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that it's paying off,
that
right?
It's paying off, right.
Tell me the products now that you have, you know, the whole line of batch number two products.
So the full line as of right now is a original whole grain. We have a spicy black and Cajun mustard. We have a purple mustard that's made with reduced red wine and grape juice. We have a ballpark yellow mustard and a tomato ketchup. And here in the next week or so, we will also have a curried ketchup, which is, we just got the labels delivered last week.
Did you envision the company growing this direction? Did you, you know, did you have this in mind all along?
So, yes and no. Because, in one hand, like, of course, when you come up with an idea and you take enough, you have enough goal to go through with some of it, there's that optimistic part of humanity. This is, of course, I'm special, I'm the best, and this, there's no way that this isn't the next Heinz, you know? And at the same time, I didn't expect it. Because, you know, every other time I've thought that, it was, you know, incorrect. And so seeing decisions coming down the pipeline that are bigger decisions, and, you know, I always told myself, like, well, how far would we let ourselves grow? When I have that question, then I'll have too many, whatever. But there's actually questions there now that are going to start to guide, you know, how I take things and how I make my, and so, yeah, yes and no. I did expect it, and then I actually really didn't.
Any advice for other food entrepreneurs? You know, I feel like everybody's got this idea in the back of their head.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, off the gate, I just want to say, like, do it. Give it a go. But I guess that should be hedged with some sort of caution. I encourage anybody to go for it. But I don't want to think that, you know, like, that it's like, you know, an easy, all you got to do is make the decision to do it, and it's there. I'm saying that you can make the decision to do it, work hard at it, and you're still not, you know, guaranteed anything, and I think that, you know, but at the same time, there's a lot of, you know, self-doubt and all those things you get hung up on that are sometimes maybe the only things that are stopping you from doing what you really want to do. And so I think that, you know, if you really want to, you know, pay the toll for it, then absolutely, then go for it and go all the way. But there's still a toll.
We've been talking today with local entrepreneur and Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge winner, Zach Rohn of Batch Number 2. For more information on his artisan mustards and ketchups, go to batchnumber2.com. We are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio with a food biz focused show today. We are talking with winners of the recent Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge, a contest sponsored by Reliable Water Services that provides seed money and business advice to new food startups. And in that startup category of brand new businesses, Ed Bond of Primal Delights Kombucha took top honors. I caught up with Ed in the green room of Wish TV's Indie Style morning show this week. He and batch number two, Zach Roan, were on the program. So after my segment on restaurant news, I sat down with Ed to learn a little bit about what kombucha is and where his Primal Delights company is going.
Kombucha is a fermented sweet tea, basically. It's been brewed for thousands of years. More or less, it's a probiotic health beverage. And I flavor it with different natural organic juices or herbs and flowers. Basically, it started out of necessity for my family and I. We wanted to be a little healthier, start getting rid of sodas and things like that out of our diets. And this is a great alternative. It's kind of like craft beer. It's very, each person has their own personality into it. The brewers do.
So you started brewing it at home.
Yeah, I started brewing at home, exactly. So, I got the culture from a friend who brewed, and she was done doing it. It took too much of her time. I was like, you know, I love this kind of stuff. I'm a DIY kind of person. So, and kombucha, you know, I just wasn't happy with the stuff that I found on the markets that I was paying $5 a bottle for. So I was like, let's try this and see what happens. And I found a couple different blends that I liked, and it was growing and brewing, and I kept making more and more and more. My family loves it, so we decided to, you know, start selling it and make a business because all our friends were wanting to buy it from me.
So how long have you been doing it? How long has the business been going?
Well, the business has been the business since September. So it took a few months to kind of get things up and running and figure out how I can brew it in a kitchen, but I've been brewing for about 5 years at home. So
now, how do you come up with the different flavors? Is it just trial and error?
Trial and error, yeah. I've always been into cooking, and I've worked in kitchens, and I love flavor profiles. So to me, a lot of it, I know what flavors to use to make it taste good, and then I experiment, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. When I find something that works, I really make a point to write down how I made it so I can emulate it again and keep reproducing it. Habaneros and limes, those are good flavors, you know. Lavender and lemongrass are good flavors, you know. I just look at it as an art almost.
You know, some kombuchas can be a little, well, I don't know. A lot of people might not have liked maybe the when they've tried kombucha in the past. Now, tell me how yours is different.
Well, I feel like mine is different in a sense that it's a naturally carbonated beverage. A lot of times you purchase it on the market, it's carbonated artificially through CO2, kind of like some sodas are and things of that nature. Mine's all naturally fermented. So it's not as fizzy as a lot of people, so they might think it's a little underperforming because they're used to that on the market, but the kombucha drinkers who drink it know that, oh, this is like raw, real living food. I just wanted something that was a little more in your face and more bold, because that's kind of how I am in a personal, like my personality is sometimes. So a lot of it was just kind of, I don't call it weak, but it just didn't hit the palate the way I wanted it to. So I steep mine overnight and really infuse the flavors into the of the tea. That brings out a lot more flavor from the herbs and flowers and whatever I'm using to give it that more bold flavor. And then I've got it on a process where I pretty much got it down to a tea, like how long I want it to ferment and sit before I start adding flavors for a second fermentation. So it's not too sweet and it's not too sour. There's a fine line, and if I miss that by a day or two, it'll be really strong and people won't want to drink it, and my kids will tell you for sure.
Because it can be sour or mm-hmm. overwhelmingly right. sharp, yeah. Maybe, you know?
It can get really tart, yeah.
Yeah. So now, tell me just a little bit about beyond tea and flavors, you know, so that we really understand what kombucha is.
It's a fermented sweet tea, so it's very simple in reality, but it's it's a replacement for those who it's probiotic rich.
Now, what makes it different from regular tea?
Well, regular tea, it's hard to say what makes it different from regular tea. The fermentation and the SCOBY, right. The mother.
Now, tell me what that is.
SCOBY stands for symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. So there's bacterial and yeasts in there that are healthy bacteria and yeast, as opposed to some that are bad for you. Obviously, they eat off the sugars and the caffeine in there and break it all down into a probiotic-rich type of beverage. So just drinking regular tea, it's great. It's full of antioxidants. This just lifts it up to a totally different level. You're still going to have antioxidant profile, anti-inflammation with it. I look at it. I have a friend. She's an Olympic power lifter, and she uses it as a recovery drink. So it can replace people who are very active in sports beverages. So tea's a social drink, and I want to make this a social drink as well, kind of like craft beer. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Now it's not an alcoholic beverage, though, right?
No, it's definitely – it's non-alcoholic, yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me a little bit about being in the Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge. You know, how did that go? What was it like competing?
I was super nervous, but it was really exciting, and I feel very fortunate to even got chosen as a finalist in the startup category. It was a great experience. This whole week has been pretty busy. I've been getting calls from people, and they want to meet, and, you know, things are happening way faster than I ever thought I would get out of it, so it was an awesome experience. Glad I did it. If anybody ever has a chance to have a product, go for it. It's a great contest. Everybody was really nice. You get excellent feedback. My label designs, you know, now I have some good ideas from some of the judges on how to better package and brand it.
So how was that, getting standing up there in front of people and then having the judges kind of critique you there in front of an audience?
Yeah, that's exactly, it was scary, and I didn't know how I would react, and I think it was a great experience, really. You know, it was, yeah, exactly, they're critiquing me in front of people I don't even know, strangers, so I just kind of blocked it all out and just focused on the judges and everyone. I pretended I was on Shark Tank, like I was pitching it to some investors, and just kind of worked off of everybody and improvised.
Any advice for you know, other food entrepreneurs who might be thinking about, wow, I kind of have this product, I should do something with it?
I'm still new in this world as far as getting products out and starting a business, but that was the best thing for me, is just to do it. You never know, and it was validation, because I have always questioning myself, is this good, is it bad? Yeah, we like it, but will everybody else like it? And the contest helped validate that, you know, at least those people there, you know, I was chosen as the winner, and it's awesome. I can help boost up my production and get the business rolling even better and faster. But if you got something you like and you're passionate about it, just do it. Don't be afraid, because I was for so long, and I just stopped, and motivation from my wife and family and friends, do it. And I just kept doing it, something every day. As long as you do one thing every day to work on your business or your product, that's all I can say, because that's what I do. And now I'm working on two or three things a day. So it's really awesome.
We've been talking with Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur winner Ed Bond of Primal Delights Kombucha. For more information, look for Primal Delights on Facebook. Been talking about new local food businesses today here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, companies that won the recent Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge in Indianapolis. But some of the contest winners were chosen by audience members who came to the event last week at Ivy Tech Community College. They got to sample each entry and vote for their favorites. One of those People's Choice winners was Indiana Craft Jerky, and company owner Michelle Twiddell tells us how she got the jerky company going and how it took off from there.
So he and his best friend started a company. It was called Hungry Carnivores. And they filed with the state and got their state ID and their federal ID number. And they worked really hard on making the jerky taste really well. And in the process, they built a kegerator and had a lot of fun cooking the beef jerky, but never found a commercial kitchen to actually make and sell. And with them having full-time jobs, they never had a lot of opportunity to take off time. And they would have had to have done food service, the safe serve, and get a HACCP plan together and put together a business plan. And
But that never just never happened?
No, it never happened. They talked about it a lot, and I listened to it a lot for, I think it was slightly over 3 years that I listened to all of the items that they needed to do.
But they weren't doing.
But they didn't do, right.
Okay,
so in 2015, they decided to dissolve the business when they had to file taxes for the third year in a row. And
that they didn't make any money?
They never made a dime.
Okay.
And so when they dissolved the business, I said, I'm going to take over. And I aligned myself with the beer companies. So because they're craft beer, that's why we named ourselves Indiana Craft Jerky, to kind of segue and be right in line with all of the beer companies. And I had all of the paperwork done and all of the items I needed to do. I was just looking for that commercial kitchen. And over the spring break of 2015, I was out driving around, and I had called and been to a lot of places, couldn't afford them. And I found a restaurant that had been closed for a while, and found the owner and met with him, lowballed him. He was really nice about it. I had explained to him what I wanted to do, and I knew he thought I was crazy. But it was going to bring him just a little bit of income for June, July, and August.
So this was last summer. You thought you would give it a try last summer.
Right. I was just going to do the farmers markets in Hendricks County. And I was only going to do them for June, July, and August, and then go back to work. And
so you worked in a school.
Right. I worked at Avon High School. And it got so big so fast that I did not go back to Avon High School.
So after 3 months, you were able to quit your regular job and focus on this?
Yes, I did that. Started doing this full time. And we went from Hendricks County markets to Carmel picked us up. And so now we had 5 markets a week instead of just 3 or 4. And we just got so big so fast. And some of the people at the farmers market were, of course, very, I don't want to say jealous, but I can't think of another word, that we had a commercial kitchen, and they're so hard to find. And I had this restaurant and all this dining room space that I wasn't using. So I met with the owner of the restaurant and told him my insane idea, another one, less than 3 months after I had met him, that we could turn it into a commercial kitchen. And I took him to Andy's kitchen to show him how it worked. And he was so nice. He built all 3 of the new kitchens inside the dining area so that everyone at the farmers markets would have an opportunity to come and grow.
So you did that too. Oh my goodness. So it's been a busy year for you. Now,
right. It
has just been just about a year, right?
It's been a year and 3 weeks.
Did you expect this to happen?
No, not in the slightest. I didn't expect the jerky business to go so well, and then I didn't also expect to be running a commercial kitchen on the side also.
Now tell me about the jerky products. What do you make?
We use whole muscle meat, and we slice it all ourselves and make our own marinades for every flavor. We started with 2 flavors, and then it has grown until we have 16 total. We're constantly trying out new flavors. They may not make it into the mix, or they may not be keepers, but we sure do try new flavors all the time.
Now, what was the reaction, you know, when you first started the company a year ago with the new focus and the new sort of get things done kind of perspective? What was the reaction?
Most people seem to be like, oh, that's really cool, and roll their eyes behind your back. And when someone would ask me what I do, and if I said I make beef jerky, I was kind of hesitant to say it because I was worried that they were going to make faces at me. But some people are very supportive, and some people love beef jerky and immediately want to know if I have some on me at that moment. No, I don't carry it around with me in my car or my purse.
So last week you were the People's Choice winner in your category of the Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge. Now, how was that competing in that in that contest?
Actually, my favorite part was getting the feedback from the judges, because since I've never been an entrepreneur in the food business, their feedback was highly valuable to me.
Now, how do you see the company expanding?
We are hoping to meet with some investors and grow, get a larger facility. I would like to bring on at least one part-time employee, maybe another full-time. Couple things that we do is there's a bison farm in Bloomington, and we make their jerky. We also make the jerky for Tyner Ponds in Greenfield, and just doing those two a couple times a month does take up a lot of our time. I would like to expand that and help other places make jerky if that's what they want to add to their repertoire. I also hope to align ourselves with a few breweries and make them exclusive flavors with their beer.
Because that was one of the things you mentioned in the Entrepreneur Challenge last week, is that you are aligned with a brewery in Chicago, right?
Yes. They ask us to make them a jerky with a really heavy porter, and that's not an easy task. But they're very nice, and they send us the beer and tell us when they need more, and we make it for them so that they can cut it up and serve it in their tap room.
So you envision more collaborations like that with, you know, with the craft beer industry?
Yes. I would really like to get in with especially some of the new ones and help them out, because we've had so much help from people along the way, and that's been a huge blessing for us, that I would like to pay that forward or pass that on.
So you mentioned that you didn't have, you know, a background in the food business or anything like that. You know, was this all sort of a surprise how it developed? I mean, and just in the past year, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it has been amazing. I've always liked to watch food shows, and so it's in a way it's creative. And it's artistic in its nature. You have beef, and if you look up a jerky recipe on Google, it's so boring. And so to make that flavor expand and pop out, you just have to have a vision. And so we're part of Indiana Grown, and this past March or April, they had an event downtown at the State House, and I took all my jerky and it all disappeared in under an hour. And so I had some time to walk around and meet some of the other vendors, and that's when I met Zach from batch number 2. And I never thought of mustard as a marinade, but as I'm talking to him, it's like, you know, I think maybe a nice spicy mustard would be good. And he gave me a jar of his mustard, and I took it back and played with it, and we came up with the spicy mustard bacon jerky.
So where do you see, you know, more products down the road, you know, that sort of thing? It sounds like you have grown so much, though. So are you a little concerned about the growth?
That's a good question. I'm not so much concerned about the beef jerky business, but my husband says I caught the entrepreneurial bug, and I have about 4 other businesses going through my brain all of the time. And when we were at the event last week, and I was explaining to them what our financials were and everything, I didn't mention to them that I've never gone to one place to sell ourselves. Most people come to us, or everything that we do is through farmers markets and beer festivals. So we've grown just on word of mouth. So I've gotten myself to a point where within the next couple months, I plan to go out and actively try and sell ourselves. So we're getting ready to grow again, I think. I think we're going to have to move facilities soon, because if we grow like I think we might, we don't have enough space.
So it's going to be another good year, it looks like.
I hope so. I hope it's another good year.
We've been talking with Michelle Twiddell of Indiana Craft Jerky. For more information on the company, go to IndianaCraftJerky.com. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio talking about new local food businesses. Robin Willis of Robbie Baby's Kitchen was a People's Choice winner in last week's Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge in Indianapolis, and she tells us how she went from entering jams and jellies in the county fair to launching her own company.
Well, Robbie Baby actually is my nickname that I earned back in the 90s, I think. I started out doing the state fair and the county fair, and then I would sell my products at Trader's Point Creamery and then the Abundant Life with my own labels that I would make off of my computer. And I'm technologically flawed, so I would have a little help here and there getting that done, but I knew in order to get into Indiana Artisan, and that was one of my real goals, was to do that, I needed to make a little bit nicer label. So we still did that for the first two times. We did it at home with, I have this cute little monkey puppet that I would bring to market with me. His name is Bob. My name is Robbie Baby, so its name is Bobby Raby. And I would take him and bring him to market all the time, so the kids would be actively involved in playing with the monkey while I sampled the adults. So Indiana Artisan, the first time I tried to jury in, they didn't understand the monkey. So we gave a little one inch by one inch card attached to the jars to explain it. And then they said, "We don't like the monkey. Get rid of the monkey." So as much as I was attached to the monkey, I was more attached to being the idea of being an Indiana artisan and really pushing myself to what I could really accomplish. So we went with a very nice graphics designer and a printing company and printed off some professional labels, which we've been using ever since.
So that's sort of interesting, you know, that it has pushed you, you know, to let some things go, you know, and it's very interesting, you know, when you think about marketing and promotion and that sort of thing, and making, you know, your story as easy to understand as possible. Maybe I can see why they couldn't get it. You know, was it like you said, was it hard to let go, hard to take that feedback?
Well, at first I thought, I want the monkey. The monkey has purpose. But in the long run, it's just a puppet, and it doesn't, they were absolutely right. It doesn't describe my jams or jellies or the vision that I have for my little company. So in that response, it was really easy to move on to the next phase of it.
So where do you see the company going? I mean, you know, as a People's Choice winner, you got some seed money and you got advice from judges. Where do you see your company growing to?
Well, I would like to get into more smaller venues, more delis and things that are out there that show that my product's unique. It's they're handcrafted in small batches, and there's a lot of love attached to it. So I would like that to be showcased in little out-of-the-way places. And once I retire from my full-time job, which isn't going to be until a couple years from now, I would like to open up my own shop where I serve breakfast, lunch, and lots of food products that are made with the jams and jellies. That's one thing I love to do, is not just make them, but find out what I can create with them.
Now, how do you create your products? How do you come up with the flavor combinations?
Well, it has to be something that I obviously love to taste. I don't make anything like people ask me for rhubarb or strawberry jam or jalapeno jelly. And those are all wonderful things, but everybody makes those. Or you can find it everywhere. I like creating things that you can't find anywhere except for what I do.
How do you come up with a new flavor? Is there a technique that you use? Do you come up with flavors that you like or interesting combinations? How does that happen?
I'll just get a thought in my head, or I'll wake up in the middle of the night and it's like God will tell me, ooh, try this. This would be really good. Or take these two items and put them together.
Well, it sounds like you've had a lot of inspiration lately, and a lot of things have paid off. What's next?
The State Fair. I joined Indiana Grown just a couple months ago, and we're going to be selling at the State Fair. So I'm very excited about that.
So people can find you at the State Fair?
Yes, I believe it's in the Ag Hort building, and I'm going to commandeer as many shelves as I can. Since I have so many different products to get it out there, I'll also be sampling all day long for 3 days out at the fair.
We've been talking with Robin Willis of Robbie Baby's Kitchen. You can find out more at robbiebabieskitchen.com. I'm Jolene Katzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. Thank you so much for tuning in to our Food Biz Focus show this week. And thanks also to our guests, Carrie Abbott of Newfangled Confections, Zach Roan of Batch Number 2, Ed Bond of Primal Delights Kombucha, Michelle Twiddell of Indiana Craft Jerky, and Robin Willis of Robbie Baby's Kitchen. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com. Eat local, drink local, Eat Drink Indy.